The question from China, from Sita Devi Didi.
Hare Krishna. Sita Devi ki jai.
She's asking, I wanted to serve Tulasi Devi better, but after transplanting her to another pot, she withered and disappeared day by day. What should I do to compensate for this offense?
It is the nature of a devotee to think of themselves as an offender. It's a peculiar thing. Find even Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they present themselves that way to Mahaprabhu. And thematically, in many places, devotees feel like that. And that's part of Vaishnava culture. But those who aspire in the line, when they see that in another, they have some respect and appreciation for that. That, oh, they're engaged in Vaishnava culture. So who's presenting themselves as an offender, feeling those sentiments, that's a negative thing. And Srila Guru Maharaj says, negativity is the wealth of the Vaishnava, not arrogant, positive assertion. I'm this, I'm that, I've been doing this for so long. Never. They're always finding themselves in want. They have some hunger, some need, some necessity. They're feeling some absence. And so Guru Maharaj describes that as negativity. And he says, that is the wealth of the Vaishnava. Because in this context, because we should say, preface our remarks by saying, in general New Age philosophy, philosophical thinking, the idea is like, negativity is bad, you stay away from, and focus on the positive. Give, positive affirmations to yourself, and which is basically humanistic sloganeering. Right? All this so-called self-love and things like that. Because they think at the other end is, low self-esteem, beating yourself up, that kind of thing. They can only see negativity in that way. But Guru Maharaj, he equates negativity with humility. And actually, on this point, sometimes I like to remind the Chinese people that if you think of what are the values that have, from ancient Chinese culture, that have maintained until this day, anyone who knows anything remotely about China would say sincerity, humility, these are good things. And they've been a part of this culture. They're in the cultural DNA of China is sincerity and humility. They never thought that being humble was a bad thing. Someone once thought like that for a while, because of our humility, China's being exploited by, whatever. But actually, the full cycle came and they realized, actually, this is a great quality. Gurudev always preaching Mahaprabhu's Trinadapi Sunichena Toro. It's part of Mahaprabhu's teachings. Humility, tolerance, offering respect to others. I remember when we were in Mexico with Srila Gurudev, Ashram Maharaj and his team, they arranged this beautiful theater. And in that theater, it was so advanced. Everyone in the audience had a headset for simultaneous translation. So Bhuvan Pavan Prabhu, who's expert, his father was a translator for the Brazilian government. Pardon me? Bhuvan Mohan. He used to be Bhakti Vilas Parbat. He left the world as Bhakti Vilas Tapashi. But anyway, he's like had translator in his DNA. Anyway, he was translating in Spanish and it's feeding into a headset, and there's all these people, as they say, like the higher section of society, they're watching. And there was this play done by children. You know, and usually, like, if the children do a play, you know it's not going to be perfect, but it's like charming, right? You go, oh, you know, and you're like smiling, and you see they're trying to do something. Like, oh, maybe it's Krishna and Kaliya, it's some pastime. But in this case, I couldn't figure out what this play was about. You know, it's like, watch, and I mean, like, not even a clue. And then, and everyone else, and you could see, like, this isn't your usual cute little kids. Something's wrong here. And Gurudev's watching this, and it's reaching the point of, shall we say, just for the sake of example, of being intolerable. I want to use that word. So anyway, like, it goes on. It never seems to end. You can't figure out what's going on. Then finally it finishes, and I'm going, like, what is Maharaj going to say? And Gurudev, being perfect reader of situations and of people and their emotions, and he turns to me and he says, I am so impressed and happy to see that you are all following Mahaprabhu's teachings. And we're going, they are? Like, how? And what he meant was, like, he said, this was intolerable. He said, but why are they doing this? And but you're tolerating, so you're following Mahaprabhu's teachings? But I want to explain something to you. He said, they are doing this because of their love for me. That's why they're doing this. So you please forgive any discrepancy, or, and I'm admiring your toleration. But understand, they're doing this out of their love and affection for me. That's why this is being done. So with this explanation, Srila Gurudev, he actually turns an awkward situation into like a divine situation, and simultaneously captured everyone in that crowd. But he's saying, but by your following this principle of being, you know, tolerating what is otherwise intolerable, and then with humility, Gurudev said, so it's a negativity, but negativity with power. Just like the electrical current. Is Jyoti here? No, all right, anyway. But maybe disciples of Jyoti are here. Who know? You have like positive and negative current in the electrical thing. Like that's what makes it work. It has to be positive and negative. So they work together. When they work together, it's very powerful. Negative has its thing, but when they come together, that's the greatest power. So in this case, Guru Maharaj is saying, Krishna is the supreme positive. The devotee is engaged in the culture of negativity, saying, Krishna's so great, he's so wonderful, his devotees, and I am tiny, insignificant, small soul, you know, who has no value of her own independently, but that puts me in the need of the shelter of Krishna and his devotees, and I hope this is a sincere expression of my heart. Krishna's devotee, where we, every day, we're worshiping Tulsi Devi. Brindaye Tulasi Devai Priyaye Kishavashacha. Krishna Bhakti Pradi Devi Satyavachai Namono. We're saying, you can give devotion to Krishna. So we want to revere you and care for you. Our seva to you will be, you know, watering, pruning, taking care, singing the Tulsi, the praise of Tulsi Devi. Krishna only accepts offering with Tulsi Devi. But then sometimes, in the particularly in the beginning stages, devotees wonder, like, how to do this? Oh, I did something wrong. Tulsi Devi left, or, you know, is in a deplorable condition. And once Prabhupada, so many things are said. I'm not the expert on caring for Tulsi Devi. As a Krishna Priya of Sokel, she's expert. But sometimes when they would ask Prabhupada, he would say, how do you care for a plant? You know, and then they were like, oh. You know, and he'd say, what would you do if you had some plant in your house? There's a particular way you would care for that. You should care for it in that way, but added with devotional mood, some praise, and there's some specific things about, like, not to pick her leaves on Ekadashi, things like, things devotees know. But he's saying, but otherwise, common sense is, and that reminds me of Sureshri's husband, Brisa Kapi, and I just feel like such a sweet devotee and always helped me in the promotion of Guru Maharaj under all circumstances. But he was living in an apartment, a furnished apartment, for like 6 months. It means, you know, you get everything, couch, furniture, everything. And there were also plants there. So he watered them religiously for 6 months until the one day one of the lease owner was visiting his apartment. And she said to him, you know, these are artificial plants, right? Because he thought he was doing it like a real good job. So for 6 months, he was watering artificial tree, artificial plant, you know. And she said, you know, they're not real, right? So that's on the other side. But Guru Maharaj, many times he would say, I take my stand on common sense. So you would find out, like, what does this plant need? How often, what's too little water? What's too much water? What's too little heat? What's too much? How much sun does it need? You find those things out. Right? Part of devotional service is using your intelligence. Right? We use our speech, our hearing, everything. So also our mind, our intelligence. So when some service has come to you, you use your intelligence how to do that service. So I understand her heart. She feels some painfulness, like, oh, I've offended, you know, if we offend the devotees of the Lord, what can help us? But in the case of Tulsi Devi, it'll make us more mindful. And that will lead us to find, well, then how do you properly care for them? First thing Prabhupada is saying, the way you would care for a plant, which she's appearing in that form. And then, not now, but some devotees who have that seva, they can tell her some more specific things about that. But I would say try again. You know, either with the seeds from Tulsi Devi or a baby Tulsi Devi plant, and try. We know also she thrives better in some environments than others, and so different things we have to consider. But I remember in our New York temple in the ISKCON days, Brooklyn, you know, it's like Moscow, freezing cold there, but they would make a little greenhouse, otherwise a hot house, and found specific lights that were good, you know, black light, this light, that light. You find out, you know, by using your intelligence and service. So that she feels something, these words may not help her feel better, but that she feels something, I can say as observer, is a good thing. If you did not feel anything, that would be sad. But that you feel something means it's the negative indicator of positive achievement. So that's why Guru Maharaj said, negativity is the wealth of the devotee. These that I am in want, you know, I'm an offender, I have some necessity. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Prabhu, he presents Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam, the greatest book spiritual book of all time, all space, all creations. But he says in the beginning, by way of introducing himself, Jagai madhai hoite muise papishta purise rakita hoite muise lagista. I'm more sinful than Jagai and Madhai. I'm lower than the worm in the stool. If you hear my name, you'll be polluted. If you chant my name, you'll lose all your piety. That's how he's introducing himself to the readers. And then at the same time, he said, but there would be some offense on my part to my superiors if I didn't say that I'm actually the beneficiary of the grace of Nityananda Prabhu. As fallen as I am, as unqualified as I am, Nityananda Prabhu, what do you say? Preme Mata Nityananda Kripa Avatar. He's the Kripa Avatar. He's the Mercy Avatar. He blessed me. Like the people that are always asking for Ashirvad, blessings. Sometimes they would call Gurudev, call him up on the phone and say, Maharaj, will you give me your blessings? And Gurudev says, Krishna, bless you. Guru Maharaj, bless you. And the same person would call like 3 days later, 5 days later, Maharaj, can you give me your blessings? And Gurudev said, what did you do with the blessings I gave last week? Aren't they still good? They're still working? Or you ran out of blessings? Or But Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami Prabhu is saying, telling us a key in the process, saying, someone as fallen as me, I was the object of mercy of the mercy avatar himself, Nityananda Prabhu. And how did that come to me? We're told that one great devotee of Nityananda Prabhu, his name was Meena Ketana Ram, his little eccentric, he carried his own flute around. If someone was giving obeisances, sometimes he would climb on their shoulders. Imagine someone's giving obeisances, and then someone climbs on top of you, and you look at him. He's like, Hare Krishna, Jai Nitai. So he's unpredictable, and he comes to this place of Kaviraj Goswami and his brother-in-law or relative, and when he arrives, the relative is like worshiping the deity, doing some puja, and I'm doing puja, I don't need to acknowledge him. But Meena Ketana Ram, he is like Nityananda in another form. So he's not taking it personally as an insult, but he's saying you don't show respect to Nityananda Prabhu. Not him, but for Nityananda Prabhu. And he says, what is this? The second Roma Harshan Sutta? And what he's referring to is in the time of Balaram, this Roma Harshan, not Sutta, Roma Harshan, yeah. He was sitting on the Vyasasan giving some instructions to a group, and Balaram came, and he didn't acknowledge the presence of Balaram, which would seem hard to ignore with what we've heard about Balaram. Like, Balaram's over there, and you don't even go hey, Jai, Jai, Balarama ji, something, how you can ignore Balaram? And, he did that. And then we're told Balaram didn't ignore that, didn't let it go. So he picked up a big piece of kusha grass, but being that he's Baladev, he's supremely powerful, the grass, he infused it with power, it became like a javelin, a spear, and he threw it at him and hit him in the heart, killed him, he fell off the Vyasana on the ground, dead. So, of course, that's also his mercy. It's a different type of mercy for someone who, like, doesn't get what's going on. There's still a hope for somebody. But so Meena Kethana Ram saying, like, is this not the second room? So you can understand, something bad is going to happen. Saying, what is this? And he's like, he's very hurt. Again, it's not false ego, it's for his Lord. So he breaks his flute and goes, and he's like very upset. I thought, never upset such, he's one of the Dwadasha Gopal 12 principal cowherd boy associates of Nityananda Prabhu. That's who he is. He's with him in every leela, every pastime, everywhere, eternally. So Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, later he's talking to his relative and says, you don't understand what you've done. He said, what? And he said, your thinking is guilty of the nyai is Vedic logic. He said, and there are sutras for the nyai. He said, there's a faulty logic called Ardha Kukiya Nyai, which means the false logic of half a hen. So it means the hen, the chicken, gives an egg. So someone says, I like the half that gives the egg, but I don't want to feed the face. So in logic, in nyai, they say, this is a fault. And he's saying, you present yourself to the world ostensibly as a devotee of Sri Chaitanya Dev. You say, you're presenting yourself in the world in that way. He said, but everyone who knows anything about Mahaprabhu knows how dear, there's no one more dear to him than Nityananda Prabhu. In fact, who was it, either Srivas or Advaita? Srivas. He once gave dandavats to Mahaprabhu first in the presence of Nityananda, and Mahaprabhu said, this is unacceptable. You don't understand my nitai. You always must, we always say nitai gauranga. So Nityananda first, and then you can approach me. And it was a higher devotee. We understand it's lila, it's to teach everyone. But we cannot possibly understand how dear Nityananda Prabhu is to Mahaprabhu. And if we think, as we've told in Guru Maharaj's line of thought, Balaram's the first other than Krishna. And so you would think Krishna's first other than himself. So if we want to say so-called expansion, you would think, well, that person, they would be like very much like Krishna. And that's true. Balaram is considered all intents and purposes equal to Krishna. It's negligible, the difference. But what's interesting is he's not in the mood of Krishna. He turns to Krishna and he wants to offer himself in service. So it says, Ekala Ishwara Krishna Arsa Britya. That verse, it says there's one Ishwara, supreme controller, Krishna, like in the Brahma Sangita, Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadi Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karnam. This Balaram, who's Krishna's equal in every way imaginable, but looks a little different than Krishna, he only wants to serve Krishna. He's madly in love with Krishna and only wants to serve him. Why is his name like Shesh or Ananta? It means Ananta. He has unlimited ideas how to serve Krishna. And Shesh means the ultimate end is devotion to Krishna and service to Krishna. He expresses that. And he, with his thousands of heads as Ananta Shesh, is eternally glorifying Krishna. But how much does he love Krishna? I'm told he is the chair, expands himself, chair, garments, sacred Where's it? Sacred thread, his cushion, his pillow, when Vishnu lies down on Shesha, his bed. Guru Maharaj says, remember, what type of infinite is Krishna? His bed is infinite. So the infinite is lying on a bed of infinite. And I thought, there are love poetry and songs where one lover, usually the male, they're expressing towards a female saying like, I want to be the ground that you walk on. You know, and we think, oh, you know, it's like a sweet, poetic, romantic sentiment. But in Balaram, it's actually achieved. It goes beyond poetry. He is the ground that Krishna walks on. The loving soil that he is the chair that Krishna is. He has become the clothes that are adorning Krishna. This is how much he loves Krishna and wants to be with Krishna, and how much Krishna wants to be with him. We're told when we were talking about when Nityananda Prabhu appeared and Birachandrapur, and how much beloved he was by his father Hadai Pandit, his mother Padmavati, that he, on the plea of one sannyasi who needed an assistant, he goes touring the holy places. But we're told that really he's waiting for, Nitai is waiting for Gauranga. But of course he knows he's in his early pastimes in Navadvip, as we told recently. The childhood pastimes, the pastimes of being a scholar, teacher, etc. But he's waiting like for that call, when we're going to join together again, the two of us. Krishna and Balaram, Gaur and Nitai, Gaur and Nityananda. So he's visiting holy places, he goes to Vrindavan. When he sees the place of their childhood pastimes as Krishna and Balaram, he's just so over, he falls to the ground in ecstasy. He's like Ganga, like tears are coming from his eyes. He's crawling on, realize this is the house where, you know, of Nanda Bhavan and things like that. And people are astonished to see him. But at one point he says, there are no deities of Krishna here. Where's Krishna? And the response comes and they say, he's appeared in Navadvip. Oh, you know, my Lord Krishna. Yes, Krishna's, but little different. Same, but different. And so he starts making his way towards Navadvip. We're told Mahaprabhu, he's in Navadvip, but like Nimai Pandit portion of the pastimes, transitioning to Gaurahari, going towards the sannyasin. But he's also, it's beyond what we can see of how much love and affection they have. He can't wait for Nityananda to come. We're told he's crying out Bap Pundarik for Pundarik Vidyaniti, Radharani's father. But Nityananda, he's so eager waiting for him. And he has this dream where he sees, like, we can say Balaram, Nityananda, Nityanandaram on a chariot, on Baladev's chariot, like furiously riding horses, driving towards Navadvip. So Nimai Pandit tells, Srivas Thakur and I think Haridas Thakur to search, or Mukunda, I can't remember. Maybe Srivas, anyway, to search Navadvip. He's saying, an auspicious personality is coming. You know, try and find him. Yeah. And they go searching. And we could say, really, they have the spiritual capacity to, like, GPS on Nityananda. But in this pastime, they come back empty-handed. And they're going, we've searched everywhere. We even looked in like Malecha's. We went every, you know, because Nityananda is so unpredictable. And they went, maybe not in the house of the devotee. Who knows where he might be? And they're saying, but we couldn't find him. And when they tell that, instead of Mahaprabhu like expressing great disappointment, he's smiling mildly and says, come with me. And he takes them and they go to the Nandanacharya, his home. And think about it, like Nandamar Nanda. And they go there and they find Nityananda. And Nityananda is so astonished to see the transformation of Krishna into Gauranga. And Gauranga Mahaprabhu is also astonished to see how Balaram is transformed into Nityananda. They're embracing each other, crying incessantly, having secret talks, using hand signals. They say things that no one can understand, no one can perceive. But Nityananda is just, he's thinking about those pastimes. Krishna and Balaram and the cowherd boys, how wonderful it was. And knowing his heart, Mahaprabhu tells Mukunda, who's like the greatest singer of all time, like, sing something appropriate. And he's singing either one of the, like, Barhapidam Natabara Bapukarne Okarnikaram Bibrat Basa Kanaka Kapi Sambhai Jayantim Chamalam Randran Venu Udhaya Sudhaya Puriam Gopa Vrinde Brindaranam Suparamanam Pravishad Gita Kirti Shyamam Hiranyaparidam Banamali Barha Datu Prabhala Naravesha Navratangse Vinyastam Astamitarena Dunam Abjam Karno Utpalaka Kapola Mukhav Jahasam. He's telling descriptions of Krishna and Vrindavan, and there are also descriptions that include Balaram. He's saying, how beautiful he looks with the peacock feather. And Balaram is just totally enamored, and Nityananda Prabhu, hearing these descriptions of Krishna. And he's playing on his flute, and then the sound of the flute, the nectar from Krishna's lips enters the flute as he's blowing on the flute. So it's filled with this nectar, and the nectar comes streaming out of the flute, nectarizing the whole environment in the form of this divine, inconceivably beautiful sound. All the cowherd boys, they're all singing and dancing, playing their instruments. Krishna's fluting. The Braja Gopis are in the balcony looking. Krishna, out of the corner of his eyes, is looking at Radharani and the Braja Gopis. And Balaram is there. He's singing and dancing. They all have their lunch kits from Mother Yasoda and all the cowherd ladies. And it's such a beautiful scene. The last line, Guru says, Vrindaranam Svapadaramanam Pravishad Gita Kirti. And what? Inconceivable of inconceivable thing. What to speak of this thing? Scene? The earth, who's the lady? The earth, she's shivering in conjugal ecstasy due to the touch of the lotus feet of Krishna. So what is Vrindavan? And what is that place? Hearing it such, and the other one, saying Krishna, he's wearing the Vaijayanti Vrindavan flower garland. He has his arm on Balaram. He likes to lean on Balaram. Other cowherd boys too, but like Balaram. And he's twirling a lotus flower. We're told the wives of the Brahmin, when the lotus flower is going like this, their hearts are going like that. And they're on the verge of fainting. They're also filled with conjugal ecstasy, like Krishna's making their hearts whirl. And he thinks it's a beautiful, happy scene. Hearing this, Nityananda Prabhu, he faints in ecstasy. And he can't believe the situation. Here they are again, but in these new divine forms. And we're told, how much does Mahaprabhu love Nityananda? He takes him in his lap. So now Nityananda's head is in the lap of Mahaprabhu. He's like stroking Nityananda Prabhu. And Gadadhar Pandit, who is Srimati Radharani, is looking on the scene and saying, how beautiful is this? Saying, normally, Balaram is the bed. So but here is a rare instance where the Lord has defeated the devotee. Normally, devotion is where the devotee defeats the Lord. Here's a very rare instance where Krishna won. He defeated him. Like, now he's the bed. How beautiful, how sweet is that? So anyone who will ignore Nityananda Prabhu, they can only have a nightmarish, bizarre fantasy about having any proper regard for Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, the point of the, he chastised his relative, and we're told he fell down sometime due to this offense. And what was the offense? He did not recognize the superior position of the devotee. And that's one of the things Mahaprabhu is teaching, saying, Nityananda is my greatest devotee. You never overstep, disregard, circumvent the devotee to come to me. That's not realistic. It's thematically the same in Gopal Bhatta's. How is that? The, like, Archan, Padati, or Hari Bhakti Vilas. Anyway, that section where he's saying, Govinda Balabhe Radhe Prataye Tvamahangsada. Krishna's saying, you want connection with me? It's not my department. That's the department of whom? Govinda Balabha. That means Radharani, the lover of Govinda. Greatest lover of Govinda. That she arranges these things. And I thought about this, that in the world, when you're going to see like a really top level person, whether it's in corporate or governmental or, you know, like the top person, they, and you want to have a meeting with them, sometimes they will say like, I don't do that. You have to see my secretary. If you say, you can't, no, I can't schedule a meeting with me. You have to see my secretary. She does that. She knows everything. You see her and you get a meeting with me. I can't even tell you that. So even in this world, we have that. What to speak? In the divine world, Krishna's saying, you want to meet with me? Talk to her. She makes all these arrangements. So we're told, Guru, seen as Radharani's delegation or Nityananda's other self. This covers everything. But Kaviraj Goswami is saying, that Nityananda, I told you I'm so fallen, more sinful than Jagai and Madhai, lower than the worm in the stool. All of these things are true, I'm saying, no doubt. But Preme Mata Nityananda Kripa Avatar. Nityananda, he's the mercy avatar. He is intoxicated with Krishna Prem. And just like a man who's intoxicated, when they're drunk, saying, Utam Adam, who's high, who's lower, a nice person, a not so nice person, a supremely qualified, totally unqualified. They're not distinguishing. They're so intoxicated and enjoying the beverage they're drinking. They just say like, you're drinking with me. Now you're going to drink what I drink. I want everyone to drink what I'm drinking. And he's saying, so Nityananda being intoxicated with Krishna Prem, he's mercifully, sharing that divine nectaring substance with everyone. And so Kaviraj Goswami is saying, this is how my good fortune came to me. That evening, I went to sleep, and then the dream, Nityananda was there. And he said, and he was deeply intoxicated with Krishna Prem, chanting, Krishna, Krishna, and rolling back and forth, staggering in his intoxication. He said there were bees humming around his garland. He was surrounded by his eternal associates. And he said, Krishna Das, now you go to Vrindavan, and there all your heart's desires will be fulfilled. So Kaviraj Goswami said, it's because of the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu alone that I was given entrance in the Vrindavan. I went to Vrindavan. There, this inspiration came down to me to present Charitamritam. The Madan Mohan deity certified, as did all the other senior devotees, and therefore I've humbly taken up this work. So when I was in, is it Nova or Novosibirsk?
Novosibirsk.
There, and it was like 30 below there, and with Malini and her mother. Who was her mother? Leela Shakti? I think. Yeah. Huh? Yes. And I'm looking out the window. It's minus 30. And there's like just snow and ice everywhere. You may have seen this yourselves. And that's what I was saying. Russia in the wintertime looks like Sweta Dweep because everything's white. I mean, when you have like the good snow and everything, it's very beautiful. And I was looking out the window and I was thinking about this. And Guru was saying, negativity is the wealth of the Vaishnava. And that's where their power comes from. And I thought, oh, and I saw on the internet, they talk about superconductors. And they say there are certain ceramics, when you take them towards absolute zero, which is around minus 350, okay, any scientists or kids who are like good at, you know, science, right? It's around minus 350, called absolute zero. So we know negative 30 is pretty cold. But think about absolute zero, minus 350. The ceramic now has zero resistance to electrical current, and they achieve a state of what they call superconductivity. They can float, they can do all kinds of things. So I thought, this is what Guru Maharaj is saying. The humility of the Vaishnavas is so great, it takes them to that level of absolute zero, where their ego has zero resistance to Radharani's suggestion and the suggestion of Guru and Vaishnav, Sadhu and Shastra. They become superconductors of that divine current. Right? So they're empowered with Shaktivesh-like qualities. So that the depth of that negativity is not low self-esteem, but what it tells us is how high is his estimation of Mahaprabhu, Krishna, these pastimes, that he's really the substantial person to be the conduit through which these divine pastimes are expressed in the world. Yes, any other question?
There are two questions that are interrelevant, so I will merge them. Okay. One is from Gupta Govardhan, another from China, from Lakshmirani Didi. So Lakshmirani asks, how can we never forget to serve Krishna? And question from Gupta Govardhan is, we hear that service to the Lord should be incessant. Why is it so important?
But she's the first Lakshmi Rani said, how to not forget Krishna or service
yes,
to...
How can we never forget to serve Krishna?
Oh, yeah. Well, what comes to mind immediately, in line and thematically with what we just expressed, is by understanding that service to Krishna's devotee is service to Krishna. That we should always remember. There's a very beautiful verse. It says, the second half says, Tasmai deyam tato grajam sa pujo cha yata hyaham. Sorry. Cha yata hyaham. Krishna is saying, whatever applies to me applies to my devotee. So, and in the Bhagavatam, mad bhakta puja abhyarika, the worship of the devotee takes precedence of the over the worship of Krishna. When, you know, Parvati asked Shiva, of all the types of worship, which is the best? He said, Aradhananam Sarvesham, Vishnu Aradhanam Param. You know, worship of Vishnu or Krishna is the best. And she felt some a little despondent in her heart because you think, well, I'm serving you. But the second half of the verse comes, Tasmat Devi, Tasmat Parataram Devi Tadiyanam Samarchanam. But higher than that, better than that, is the worship of who is dear to Krishna. That means the devotee. So really, proper service to Krishna is to serve his devotees, and through them, our service to Krishna is transacted. Right? We don't try to serve Krishna directly. And what was the second part?
We heard that service to the Lord should be
incessant.
Why it is so important?
Well, there's a general idea and, you know, something very specific. So, to stay vital, we want that the connection be constant. Right? It's a current. It's like a current, like we have electrical current. Right? When if it's disconnected for a short time, then if it's connected even for a short time, we're in darkness. So we want to be always on, right? We always want to maintain that connection. Service has been compared to a current. Without it, without that current, it's a shell of the substantial thing. So we want it to be constant. Then there's a constant source of illumination, right? And revealing of substance. But what I like to say is that sometimes Guru Maharaj, he would say, 24 hours service is only possible in Madhura Rasa. Now we're going to a higher consideration. Because we thought, well, wait, you mean, what are you saying? Yashoda's not serving 24 hours a day? No, now we're talking, we're qualifying the statement. So what Guru Maharaj is saying in a very delightful way, he said, well, Yashoda, she wants Krishna. She's his mother and has motherly sentiments. He's herding the cows and it's very labor intensive. She wants him to get a good night's sleep because tomorrow more cow herding. He said, while Radharani and Brajagopis, they want to meet Krishna at night, in the dead of night, in the depths of the Vrindavan forest. So he'd sometimes say, like with a little smile, like, so Vatsalya Rasa and Madhura Rasa, they're antagonistic towards one another. She wants him to get a good night's sleep. They want him to like sneak out of his house and rendezvous with them in the forest. So Guru Maharaj would say, 24 hours seva is only possible in Madhura Rasa because they're serving Krishna all night. And there's also a very beautiful verse in the Bhagavad Gita. It says, Mahatmanas tu mam parta, devim prakritim asrita, bhajan tvananya manaso, gyatva bhuta dimavyayam. And I remember many years ago, after I started hearing from Guru Maharaj and coming under the influence of his conception, I was looking at this in the Bhagavad Gita. And it's generally Mahatmas, it would be written like the great souls or Devi Prakriti or sheltered under the superior. They're always incessantly glorifying, you know, Krishna, something like that, you know, worshiping Krishna. I know. But then I thought, and Guru Maharaj's line of thinking, his ontological method, and I thought, well, what if we get more specific and say Mahatmas, I mean, great soul, but like, of great souls, who are the greatest souls? Of great souls. It must mean Brajagopis. And says, Devim Prakriti Masrita, the Devi Prakriti who are completely sheltered there, that must mean Brajagopis. And then Guru Maharaj, you know, Bhajan Twananya, that means Bhajan Ananya, it's unbroken, it's incessant, it's 24 hours. So we could say that this sloka is saying that Mahatmanastamam Partha, Devim Prakriti Masri, Bhajan Twan, that the Braja Gopis under the direction of Radharani, the Devi Prakriti, they're 24 hours engaged in incessant worship of Krishna, which includes those evening pastimes. So there's different ways of looking at it, but incessant is good. Satatam kirtiyanto mam yattantastra dridhavrita namasyantastra mam bhukta nitya yukta upasate. Saying always, they're eternally glorifying Krishna, non-stop. Remember Naimishe Nimishakshetre? Why is it called Nimisha, Naimisharanya? Vishnu, who's not blinking, like who's awake eternally. So there's some, the real devotees, they can't live for a moment without that connection. Na prema gandasti dharapi mehoro kundrami sobhagya baram prakashitam. Mahaprabhu was saying, what's the proof I don't have any love for Krishna? That without Krishna, I go on showing my face in the world, doing my going about my daily activities in separation from Krishna. He's saying, but really, if you've really connected with Krishna, you won't be able to tolerate being separated from him for a moment. A moment's separation will result in death. And what's the proof I don't have any real love for Krishna? I'm alive. And where's Krishna? No Krishna to be found. So that will be the angle of vision of the higher devotees. And we're their aspiring servitors. So under their direction, incessant, nonstop Krishna participation is possible. You look like you want to say something.
Maharaj, I would like to ask, you just spoke about spiritual negativity, mm-hmm. humility, right? And how should we apply it, stay in the spiritual negativity, but still be positive in everyday life? It's necessary,
yes.
Right? We shouldn't be negative.
No, that's what I'm saying.
It should be separate. Like.
Yeah, here, what I'm saying, we're redefining negativity. Here, negativity doesn't mean like everybody's so rotten and horrible. The world is disgusting. You know, like we're not talking about that. We're talking about the person who, like, say someone was a musician, and they meet a virtuoso of that instrument. Automatically, they think like, "What am I doing? Like, I don't even want to touch my instrument. They're so great. They're like." What I'm doing is an offense compared. It means like that. It's a natural, and so we call that humility. Where if you say, you meet the virtuoso and go like, they're a little better than me. But that's arrogance. That's not going to help you. But if you think, no, they're infinitely better than me. My even touching the instrument is an offense. That person can make progress. So that's what it means. Real humility means awareness of the proximity of greatness. So that's it's not like an artificial posing or just beating yourself up or lowest, I'm not good for, you know, not that kind of thing. But genuinely appreciating the greatness of something other than yourself, automatically you feel small, humble, tiny. And what that does, that draws the grace of the superior to you. As two positives repel. When souls, tiny finite souls, express negativity, the positive Krishna is attracted to them by that. Then they become infused with some divine current. So again, but this is spiritual culture. Then we have to live in the world, right? Where, and ironically, in the modern world, and just on the, we could say women in particular, it's ironic that in the modern world, women are being told that they should be not only, you know, lean in, assertive, but to the point of being like male aggressive, to like compete in this like Darwinian survival of the fittest contest, you know, the Hunger Games or what, that's whatever's going on out there. Like, so women are told like your natural feminine qualities will be, that won't be an asset in this environment. Rather, you'll have to become more like a male and assertive to the point of being aggressive and, you know, these things, which from a spiritual point of view are not desirable qualities. So then that devotee being awakened, they're aware like, it's an act. I'm not really like that, but I may have to play that part in this environment to be successful or to do my job or whatever it is, but I don't want to be that. I don't want to be that person. Right? So what I'm thinking of, there was a, many of Mahaprabhu's devotees were doctors. So this one we were talking about, Mukunda Vaidya. Vaidya means doctor, like Ayurvedic doctor. And he was the court doctor of the Muslim like governor at the time. And he would come and give him medical advice. And one time they're like on a veranda and the hot sun is shining down. And one of the governor's attendants was shielding him from the sunlight with a peacock feather, you know, fan. We have a fan and it's made of many peacock feathers. So he's shielding him like that. And Mukunda is giving him medical advice, just straight medical advice. He's a doctor, he, you know, he's confident, qualified, everything. But he sees those peacock feathers. And he's a great devotee. And when he sees the peacock feather, just like the verse I quote before, barhapi means a peacock feather, barhapi dam nadavara bapukarni okarni, he starts seeing like Krishna. And then into the spiritual world, and Krishna and his pastimes, Krishna and the devotees, and he's having this overwhelmingly divine experience. He leaves this world, then enters the spiritual world, and like live, real-time, live-streaming Leela pastimes. And this causes him to enter a deep state of ecstasy, and he faints and falls onto the floor. Then that governor, they like wake him up, you know, and they go like, where does it hurt? What's it? And he goes, no, I'm fine. And because he is a great devotee, he's concealing his position. He said, I have like epilepsy. And every now and then I have like one of these seizures, but I'm okay now. And they go, oh, we were worried. Right? So, I mean, this is an extreme example, but it's like a high level devotee. But it's showing he could operate in the material world as a doctor, totally qualified, confident doctor, but certain things would bring about some deep internal remembrance of Krishna consciousness. And he, if we want to learn something from this, he is keeping it to himself, we'll say. I don't expect you like to faint and fall out of your chair onto the floor in remembrance. But when you're operating in the world from time to time, something may pleasantly remind you of Krishna consciousness, some beautiful remembrance may come to you, and it'll be something that is between you and Krishna and his devotees. Others may not know that. And actually, it's like, say, like when people are in love, but they have to go to work. I'll give another example. So, like, you're not supposed to show everybody that you're madly in love, right? Otherwise they go, hey, look at me, you know, like. So they're at work, they're doing all this stuff, but actually they're madly in love with somebody. They're always thinking about them, worrying about them, texting them. They're doing all kinds of things. But in a sense, we can say, they're putting on, no, I'm here, I'm very present, I'm on my job, I'm doing it, I'm fine. And probably they are, but at the same time, if we could have a glimpse into their heart, you say, really, they're thinking about the beloved. And that's a sweet and beautiful thing. So it can be like that also with Krishna consciousness. Somebody's functioning in the world, but when it comes to this stuff, it's internal culture and can only be shared with people who have some genuine appreciation for that.
So it actually will be okay to apply some positive affirmations that are around for the everyday life or success.
Yes,
at work
but that's true. But some things, when I was alluding to like New Age things like people like looking in the mirror at themselves and saying "I love you" or something, I think it's like misguided. You know, it's like it's almost classic narcissist. Narcissus? The story of Narcissus, right? What was Narcissus' problem? Can anyone say? He fell in love with his reflection. Him. Well, he didn't know. He fell in love with his own reflection. And that led to his... So in the modern world, and we know what it is, and now I'm alluding to social networking and all this stuff, like, too easily fits the criteria of like narcissistic personality disorder. So the people, what to speak of devotees, but even people in the modern world, they need to be like aware of that too much of this kind of thing is unhealthy. It's one thing to not get hung up about like body image and things. I understand that, I agree with that. But it's another thing, what I refer to as humanistic sloganeering, which forms the basis of a lot of New Age and self-help philosophies where, you know, just believe in yourself, believe that you can do anything, creatively visualize something, then achieve that goal. And this betrays, in my opinion, a type of arrogance that's saying, like, even if you do all these things right, there's still, it may not come out the way you anticipated. There's like people who are very talented in the arts, and someone could be like a super talented singer, songwriter, etc. And no one may know who they are, or very few people. They may not be tremendously successful. And people in that business will tell them that. They say, you know, it's like, They use the expression a crapshoot, which means throwing dice. Just that you're talented, you're good, you're all these things, it's a roll of the dice, whether or not you'll become famous and you'll be this, that, and the other thing. So to tell someone basically that you can control the world by creative visualization, you will, whatever it is you want, you will achieve that if you just visualize that and do what? Believe in you, not in any higher power or anything else, just in yourself and your abilities alone, you will get this. I think it's misleading, to say the least. The humble approach is like, so whatever assets I have in terms of skill, intelligence, etc., if a devotee will think, if Krishna's willing, there'll be some success here. If not, maybe there's a message in that also. That's how a devotee is reading the environment. Guru Maharaj mentioned, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna recommends tolerance, saying like seasonal changes, it's hot, it's cold, it's raining, the sun, you have to tolerate it, right? Heat and cold, happiness, distress, etc. But in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Guru Maharaj says, it goes deeper and says, whatever circumstances, karmic circumstances you find yourself in, sometimes, or often, they may not be to your liking, and you may feel some resentment about that? Like, what am I doing wrong? Or I think I'm a good person. I'm trying to do good things. I'm not getting the result that I anticipated. He said, understand, on a deeper examination, yeah, superficially, it's undesirable and making us unhappy. It's a cause of anxiety. He said, but if you look deeper, he said, you will see in the background the friendly hand of Krishna. He's who's controlling everything, and we must admit, it's beyond our control. Right? So he said, who is controlling everything? This, we need to understand, is my friend or my enemy? Has my self-interest at heart? Do I have a representation in the Absolute? Or the Absolute's just a insensitive, megalomaniacal, who just like doesn't care about anyone except himself? Will that be our conception of God or the Supreme Being? Or as here in this world, that we can care about other people, be sensitive to their needs. Like, so is he, in principle, inimical to us, an enemy, or a friend? The Bhagavad Gita says, in this famous verse, Bhoktaram yajna tapasam sarvaloka maheshwaram. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Everything's meant for his pleasure, not to please you or me. We notice that. Sometimes things happen that that are displeasing that we did not authorize. But ultimately everything's for his pleasure. And that person for whom, you know, not a blade of grass moves without his will, everything's meant to please him. He, the next line comes and says, Suhridam Sarvadehinam, he's your dearmost friend. Guru Maharaj was speaking in a light way. He referred to the American Revolution, where they had a saying, when they're breaking away from the King of England, one of their slogans was, no taxation without representation. They're saying some king is sitting in England just making the tax go up, and he doesn't know who we are, what is our situation? And Guru Maharaj said, so do we think Krishna's like that? We're going, no, Krishna, do you understand my situation? And what we're being told, he understands your situation better than you do. He tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, many births you and I have had, I remember all of them, you don't. So actually, he knows us better than we know ourselves. And that person is in control of everything and is not arranging the environment and karmic circumstances that are meant to take us down, but rather to promote us. But just like a teacher who gives an examination to the students, they might resent that. Think, oh, our teacher is so mean. They're giving, what do you call it, a pop quiz, where, you know, just suddenly they close the books, time for a quiz. Oh, our teacher is so mean. No, actually the teacher likes you and wants you to go to the next level, but needs to test you to certify you to go to the next level. So we find ourselves in circumstances sometimes that are not to our liking. They're not meant to take you down, but rather meant to promote you. So a devotee will think their mindset will be, by the grace of Krishna and Guru and the Vaishnavas, my life can be successful. With their grace, everything will come that's meant for me. It'll all be fine.
But we should proceed in actions anyway.
Yes,
it's not right. Waiting for the...
No, exactly. Like Guru Maharaj liked to quote the saying, God helps those who help themselves. So you can't sit there and go like, okay, I'm waiting. No, what are you doing? So we're told there's two types of surrender. The one surrender is compared to the cat, the other one the monkey. So monkeys, baby monkeys, hold on to the mother and they get carried by the mother, but they have to hold on. The cat, we know, with her teeth, she picks up the kitten and carries it around. So we're told, for us in the lower stage, what's recommended is the type of surrender of the monkey. That means, hold on, God helps those that help themselves. You've got to do something. And then you'll get so much help and forward movement. But what about the cat surrender? That's like the super high devotees who are, they're practically not in this world. Them, Krishna's taking care of like kittens, doing everything. They don't have, they're already wholly given over to him. But in our position, correct, we have to do something to show our sincerity. It's not that we'll just sit there, okay, you know, Krishna, now blow my mind with something really good. You know? So, but we won't think like, my success is dependent upon me. We'll think, yes, it's dependent on me participating and giving what I've got to give, everything. But Krishna knows. It's ultimately meant to please him. If this is good for me and my spiritual life, then it'll happen. I mean, this is the mindset of a devotee. And if, although I thought I wanted this and it didn't come to me, and then, and Krishna's in the background, so maybe it was not good for me. And that's why it's not come to me, even with so much endeavor. That's spiritual culture. Hare Krishna. Hari Haraya Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Hari Haraya Namo Krishna Yadavaya Namaha. Yadavaya Madhavaya Kesavaya Namaha. Gopal Govinda Ram Sri Madhusudan. Giridhari Gopinath Madana Mohan. Sri Chaitanya Nityananda Sri Advaita Chandra. Gadadhara Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Rupa Sanatan Bhatta Raghunath. Sri Jiva Gopala Bhatta Dasa Raghunath. Echai gochai kori charana bandan. Jaha hoite vignanash abhista puran. Echai gochai jarmui tarodas. Tansavara padarinu mora panchagra. Kandara charan sevi bhakta sanevas. Janome janome more abhilas. Echai gochai jabe braje koilovas. Radha Krishna nitya lila korilo prakar. Anande bolo hari bhaja vrindavan. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pade Majai Aman. Sri Guru Vaishnava Pad Padma Koriya. Puri Nam Sankirtan Kohe Narottamada. Hey Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare.
Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. Paramahansa Pariraja Kacharja Satara Sata Sri Sri Maj Philabhakti Sundar Govinda Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Dai Jai Om Vishnupad Philabhakti Rakak Shvidar Dev Goswami Maharaj Ki Dai Bhagawan Philabhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Dai Jai Saparikar Sri Sri Guru Guranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Ju Ki Dai Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki Dai Sri Rupanuga Guru Varga Ki Dai Nama Charja Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Dai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shubhasiddhi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Dai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki Dai Vrindavan Dham Ki Dai Navadeep Dham Ki Dai Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki Dai Sri Gupta Govardhan Ki Dai Ganga Devi Jamuna Devi Bhakti Devi Tulsi Devi Ki Dai Om Vishnu Pad Vishpa Varenya Srilasi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Dai Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mata Charja Vrinda Ki Dai Jai Srila Bhakti Bhimala Vidut Maharaj Ki Dai Seva Vrinda Ki Dai Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Dai Nitai Go Premanande